Welcome to The Startup Show. I'm your host, John Biggs. In every episode of The Startup Show, we talk to an amazing entrepreneur about how they do what they do. We'll explore tactics, tricks, and techniques for building some of the coolest things on the planet. Thanks for listening and enjoy. Howdy, howdy. Welcome to The Startup Show. I'm John Biggs. Today on the show, we have Alex back from Couch.com. Now, Couch.com sounds like it might be less complex than I'm thinking. It's just a place for couches, right, Alex? Or it's a place for couches, which is amazing.
No, it's the place for couches,
the place,
John.
The place.
Let's get it straight.
There we go.
It is a simple concept in a way. Yes, it's a place to find your perfect couch. It's sort of like the Match.com of couches. And yet it's we're solving a very complex and nuanced problem, which is simply that nobody really knows where to buy a couch.
Yeah. Now, did you buy Couch.com back in like 1989 or something, or how did that work?
Well, it would have cost me about 4,000% less if I had. Yeah. Sadly, okay. That was not the case. I got it in 2023, about a year ago, 9 months ago, and the acquisition story was very interesting. Went through a broker. It was a very, very high six-figure price tag.
Wow.
Attempted to negotiate with the broker and ultimately the buyer, who's been sort of sitting on it since the 90s when it was established. But this individual happens to be a very high net worth individual and was not interested in negotiating. They actually are part of a duo that created the product that became Google AdSense. They sold it to Google 25 years ago. So they weren't wanting for money. However, we did come to sort of an arrangement that is advantageous for both of us and allowed me to do this in a way that, you know, gave this startup a chance to survive and thrive in the short term.
All right. So give me the couch.com pitch. Why is this a startup? Hold on. Yeah. Why is it is it really that hard to find couches? I don't think I bought a couch in 20 years. So.
Okay. Well, let me ask you, John, when you're ready to buy a new couch, let's say it's time to do it for whatever reason, where would you start?
Probably couch.com, I think.
Hey, my man.
I mean, I feel like it would be like an overstock kind of situation, or okay. I don't know if you go to is Jennifer Convertible still like a thing?
Okay.
I don't know if you're familiar with that.
Of course I'm familiar with that.
Okay.
I'm a couch king, baby. No, I am just joking. I think, you know, I'll riff on what you said.
Wayfair.
Okay, great.
Feels like a place I'd go.
Right. Overstock is now sort of merged with Bed Bath & Beyond. So they're operating under Bed Bath & Beyond. There is no more Overstock. But it is a great place to buy couches. Wayfair is sort of the biggest furniture retailer in the country. And one of the biggest in the world. And there are no slouches either. A perfectly great place to find a couch. And Jennifer Convertible is, if you're looking for a product, Convertible is for those of you outside of the industry, it's like generally means a pullout couch or a sleeper couch. So all great places, but these are places that are huge sort of legacy businesses that have been around since you and I were both kids, not Wayfair, but the other two, more or less. And I think, you know, are they the best place to buy a couch? I don't know. They could be for an individual. However, there are so many options out there that when you start dipping your toe in, or if you started searching on Wayfair, you're getting introduced to thousands of products. You have no idea how to sort of discern between them and decide, you know, am I going for a microfiber couch, or should I go for something that's leather? Should I get something, you know, that's in this price range or that price range? Our goal at Couch.com is to make people feel more comfortable, pun intended, about buying a couch, because once you dip your toe in, as I said, there's these thousand variables that seem to attack you and are very hard to reconcile. So we're trying to get information from users about what's most important to them. Maybe they have dogs, they need a pink tufted couch and they need it in 3 days. Well, that's going to severely sort of narrow down the market of options of where they can go in the market to get something. So we want to get that information and ultimately send them in the right direction to the retailer that will have what they're looking for.
Mm-hmm. So the goal of Couch.com isn't to sell couches. It's to be a sort of like an affiliate that sends you to a couch company.
That's correct. So I ran a direct-to-consumer couch brand for about 13 years. And, you know, I know that space extremely well. I'm super familiar with the furniture space. And really, this is sort of the missing part. There's still a disconnect between customer and retailer that no one's really doing a great job of solving. So we're sort of solving a problem for both sides, where the retailers are also having trouble finding their sort of addressable market. Because people like you maybe haven't bought a couch in 20 years. How are they going to find you? Mm-hmm. Maybe because, you know, maybe when you start searching for a couch, you get inundated with marketing and advertising. But before that, it's really hard to identify targets. So our intention is to bring the users in and help them and also help the retailers find them on the other end.
Hmm. So you're the couch marketplace. So right now the site's basically a content site. So you're basically just kind of like doing a little SEO optimization, et cetera. What's the path for the next iteration of this?
Yeah, great question. So yes, we've had a content site up for about 6 to 8 months and have been starting to rank for certain terms over the last 2 to 3 months. Specifically, I've seen like a nice spike. So we had to sort of get started, get our foot in the door. As you well know, with SEO, it takes a little time to get everything indexed and just to start seeing what's working. So we've been sort of testing a lot of things. One anecdote, just to be more literal, like we've written, I don't know, 20 something articles about how to clean couches and couch cleaning content, something I feel like I'm expert level at this point. But that stuff isn't ranking. And what strangely is ranking is other stuff like brand reviews. It seems like Google wants brand reviews and people to help customers figure out which stores, like between the Overstock or Bed Bath & Beyond and Jennifer Convertibles, which one might be the best one for them. So we're sort of leaning into that right now and building out that part of our content as we build the overall platform for Couch.com.
Okay. So again, to be clear, you guys don't want to sell the couches. Is there enough of a affiliate sort of thing coming out of this world that it's worth being the middle person?
Well, yeah, I'm banking my life savings that I spent on the URL that it is, Johnny. No, yes. And I'll tell you why. As an advertiser for the last decade, I worked very heavily in the affiliate space. We were one of the first furniture brands on the affiliate platform, is working with some of the bigger publishers out there, the Condé Nast and the Hearst of the world, and some of the more boutique sort of furniture or design focused blogs. And I have a really good sense of the space. When an affiliate is highly influential, it really, really works. Hmm. And in the furniture space, and I think that's simply because of everything I've been preaching the last 10 minutes, people don't know where to go. They don't feel comfortable and they really are seeking advice. Just like you would go to a friend who's like super techie to figure out which is the best microphone and headset for podcasting. Like, that's not something you would feel comfortable just walking into a store and pointing at something and getting. It's quite similar in this industry. So we spend thousands and thousands of dollars a month as sort of a mid-major direct-to-consumer brand. And there are a lot of smaller boutique mom and pop and regional players out there that are not even doing anything in the affiliate space. Mm-hmm. And there are some juggernauts like Wayfair and Amazon and Bed Bath & Beyond and Costco.com that we're starting to partner with, that produce billions of dollars of revenue. So if we have the right content that helps and convinces customers and influences them to buy something and we make the right partnerships, then yeah, it can be extremely lucrative.
So it's a seasoned founder, from what you're saying. You did Apartment 2B before this. What was the process and how did the process differ for this idea versus your previous startup? Did you know everything going in? Were you streamlined, or did you still have the same kind of issues?
I didn't know anything starting the last startup. Mm-hmm. I was 26 years old. I was singing on cruise ships, literally in the Caribbean, writing this business plan.
Okay.
That's a whole other story I'd tell you over a beer sometime, but
yeah. That's every cruise ship crooner's dream, to start a couch company.
Yeah, of course, right? Mm-hmm. My business partner and I, we saw some like really early opportunity my a best friend and business partner, Matt, he was in the furniture industry for his whole career at that point. He's a bit older than me. And he was working as a manufacturer sales rep for like this old school furniture company based in Mississippi. They made like reclining sofas. Okay. Mm-hmm. And one day he gets an email to open an online account. Like someone wanted to sell their stuff online. He called the factory, talked to the sales manager. Hey, can I open up this account? He's like, well, we don't have any online accounts. So yeah, let's see what happens. So he opens up the online account. Says, okay, what do you need? Do you want an opening order? I can help, you know, put together a little program for you. They're like, no. All we need is your images, and we need a spreadsheet of all the information you can give us. Mm-hmm. So he gives it to them. Within 3 days, they had their first sale. 2 days after that, he wakes up to 5 more orders. 3 days after that, 10 orders, all going to different places throughout the country. And that's where we saw that the writing was on the wall. This was back in 2007-ish, that this was a direction that the furniture industry was growing in, where everything else was declining. That retailer that started was CSN Stores, which ended up becoming Wayfair. So that was sort of part of our origin story that got us into this. But at the time, yeah, we had no clue what we were doing. Luckily, we had a few years to figure it out before other, like, more well-funded competitors started sprouting up around us. Mm-hmm. And we had various competitive advantages that allowed us to stay healthy and to continue to grow.
Okay. So tell me about, I think it might be interesting to hear a little bit about some early foibles that you had, just so people can know that it's not all fun and games. What do you think were some of the mistakes that you made that you're not going to make again?
Oh my goodness. There are too many to count. Mm-hmm. But when I think sort of on a macro level, you know, and I'm dealing with this now, starting a new company as well. Like, I can do everything, right? Mm-hmm. But you can't do everything. And what I mean by that is, yeah, maybe you can write the articles, edit the videos, make partnership deals, go out for investment capital. These are the things that I'm trying to do all in the same day right now. Mm-hmm. But sometimes it's better to delegate. And sometimes that letting go is very important. And it took me a long time to learn that. I was answering customer emails up until probably a year or two before we got acquired by a larger entity, which is to say that like our business had scaled quite a bit and I still had my hands in every single level. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, as a control freak and a business operator, there's a benefit to that. But it wasn't ultimately the best path to growth. And it was the best path to growing gray hairs, however, which I have plenty of as a result.
That's an interesting point. You mentioned being an operator, and a lot of people go into startups not understanding what that means. What do you think defines an operator versus, I mean, somebody who might be a technical founder, but they're not really up on the business aspects of things?
Yeah, I mean, my sort of key to success personally as an operator was to be aware, if not have my hand in everything. So it's sort of a double-edged sword, right? I knew everything that was going on with our business, and I knew how to do sort of almost every task, more or less, which allowed me to empathize with my team, to help troubleshoot areas of improvement and put into place processes and procedures that made things better. I was on the ground level. Now, again, I said, you know, I didn't relinquish control quickly enough, and that's the thing I would change most if and when I do this again, as I'm doing now. But ultimately, an operator is someone who is on the ground floor of the business and is working, is aware of all the things that are going on. Whereas my business partner at the time, just to sort of round out the image here, was working on more visionary stuff and the creative side of things and talking to people and selling the idea of our company to partners, things like that. So having me sort of just take care of things on the day-to-day level as a COO and him sort of going out and selling and pitching and politicking as the CEO was a very, very successful relationship for us to have.
And the day-to-day in this case is like invoices, is, I don't know, checking warehouses, that kind of stuff. Not like fun stuff. Like, I don't know.
What's fun?
Yeah.
What's fun to you? Tell me.
I don't know, actually. In a business context, I think a lot of people have this vision of a startup where it's like fast paced. They're going to go out and in the morning they're going to raise $1 million, and in the evening they're going to sell five million couches. And right. I feel like there's a lot in between those steps. There's a lot of sub steps associated with that.
A lot of people management, a lot of communication, a lot of guiding and shepherding people, especially in e-commerce. There's a lot of younger individuals in this industry that, you know, it's sort of, and also at this point now, you know, 5 or 10 years later, since we were really, you know, rocking and rolling, so much global economy usage, a lot of virtual assistants and contractors all over the world. There's just a lot to manage. So communication, number one. Two, yeah, going in the warehouse, putting your hands on stuff, signing for shipments, vetting delivery services, and vetting, you know, reading resumes of new employees in the same day. Like all that kind of stuff, the real nitty-gritty business operations, not pretty. My office was in a warehouse with no windows before, you know, what ultimately was an eight-figure exit for our company. Mm-hmm. So it isn't always pretty, and I didn't drink any lattes. I was drinking K-cups.
All right. Well, I mean, that's still pretty fancy. A K-cup's pretty fancy. I was thinking maybe like a
Sanka,
like a Sanka. Stay actually just like hot water and a lemon, maybe.
Yeah. All right. I mean, there were those days too. I guess we did upgrade to K-cups at some point.
You talked a little bit about bringing people in on the ground floor early, young people. What's your advice for young startupers who are trying to build some kind of e-commerce play, or even just trying to build a business for themselves?
Yeah, look, I think especially now, you know, today with, you know, the buzzword is Gen Z this and Gen Z that. So it's sort of easy to bucket this sort of younger generation coming into the workforce. I think we can all agree at this point, there's enough data to show that their values are quite different. And it's not just financial. And they're not just financial in nature, their goals. Their goals are a lot more holistic than I think, you know, I'm generalizing, but my generation or our generation was taught to be. And sometimes they just want to be part of a company that's doing a good thing. Sometimes they want to feel like they're a part of something that's on its way up. And the difference between paying someone $20 an hour or $25 an hour, to them, it may not be that substantial. So I've found where I was successful is finding people on their way up who are looking to learn and grow. They were okay to maybe make a little less money, to be in an environment where they were valued, where they learned things, and where they were sort of ultimately contributing towards something very positive, whether that's, you know, a for-profit or non-for-profit business. There's still positive growth makes people feel good. So if you have something to offer, an opportunity or learning, you know, I wouldn't sell your learning opportunity or actual, you know, down the road opportunity. I wouldn't sell yourself too short. I think really leaning into those things and work-life balance and just overall good situation for younger individuals right now is really what they're seeking.
Mm-hmm. So a good situation. I mean, that's actually, it sounds like advice that almost every small business owner could use right now, because everybody's complaining that nobody wants to work. But it sounds like you found sort of the sweet spot where you make it. I don't want to use the word like they join a family, but because that's kind of creepy. But it's more like they join an opportunity, and you express that opportunity fairly succinctly and well. What's the secret behind that?
Well, I think just, you know, everybody's different. I'm just able to empathize with people and connect with people better than other people might. And to me, I just used, you know, my, I just thought about inclusivity and including people in the ride, being transparent and open, from the first interview on, like asking them about themselves, like talking about them as people, caring about their families and the things they do on the weekend. Those things made them feel valued as people, as part of, you know, this creepy family, as you said, that we were building. Like they felt a part of something versus just numbers on a page or salaries on a P&L.
Okay. Very cool. All right. So what's next for couch.com? What's going to be on the front page in a minute?
Oh my goodness. So we're building out the platform right now. And it's going to come in phases. Phase one is just to migrate all of our content over to the new site, make sure it's healthy, and continue building upon that. We are connected with a lot of partners, talking to the CEO of Lovesac next week. Like, this is what my life is right now, just sort of politicking, getting out there, spreading the word. But as far as the platform is concerned, we're creating a national database of furniture retailers. Whether they're in-store, meaning brick and mortar, or online, our mission is to create a national database so that, you know, when users come in, we can literally start to, you know, get data from them and crawl the different potential retail options for them and present them with options based on certain parameters. Mm-hmm. So we're going to be ingesting a lot of data, tagging it, categorizing it in certain ways. Obviously, we'll need help from the partners themselves, and they'll be incentivized because if they want to be seen on couch.com, they'll have to participate and help us do that. The ultimate goal is to create a self-serve platform for brands and retailers to have their own pages, much like a Yelp or like a Google My Business type of situation, where they can connect with customers, generate their own leads, and ultimately, you know, put pictures about their business, whether it's a mom and pop or it's Wayfair, pictures, reviews, things like that. Just a very curated sort of list of approved furniture retailers throughout the country that people should consider. So that's sort of a one big concept that we're working really hard on right now.
Okay, very cool. All right, so we'll keep our eye out on for more couch content. I'm very excited. Maybe I'll get a new couch at some point. That might be
it's 20 years, John. It sounds like you need one.
That'll be the culmination of this whole operation. That'll be your first and only sale.
I love it.
Alex, thank you for joining us. This has been pretty cool. Couch.com, check it out. Check out the first phase as they move into off of WordPress into a full couch experience. Have you ever thought about VR, where you live in a couch world?
I think it's a side business that we should work on together, okay. John.
VR couches, let's do it. All right. This has been the Startup Show. I'm John Biggs. We'll see you soon.